Alrighty, so today, Tuesday, February 20th, I'm going to finish up the integumentary system today. Which is what? What is the integument? Skin, that's part of it. Hair, nails, glands, like sweat glands, and there's even a little muscle in there, which we're going to look at. Alright, so your skin is your integument with all those other structures. The two main layers of your skin are the epidermis, which is very superficial. That's the part that we look at all the time. That's the epidermis. Then there's a deeper layer, which we call the dermis. And then there's even a deeper layer than that, but it's not really part of your integument, but we talk about it in this time during the class because it just sort of makes sense to talk about it now. It doesn't fit in very well in other times, and that's the hypodermis. So sometimes the epidermis together with the dermis is considered the cutaneous membrane. Sorry about my spelling. Cutaneous membrane. Oh, we never finished? Oh, okay. Thanks for reminding me. We shall. Joanna. Thank you. We will go back. Okay, well, let's talk about skin a little bit. All right, so the cutaneous membrane is the epidermis and dermis all put together. And then the hypodermis, sometimes we call that the subcutaneous tissue. Because that's what? It's below the cutaneous membrane, right? Okay, so, and the cutaneous subcutaneous tissue is not part of the integumentary system. It's just something that helps attach your integument to underlying structures like bones and muscles and things like that. The hypodermis is loose connective tissue, so it also has a lot of adipose cells in it. It has a lot of adipocytes. And as a matter of fact, the hypodermis or the subcutaneous tissue may store up to about half of your body's fat stores, just right underneath your integument before you even get to muscle. Okay, so the epidermis is an epithelium. What could you tell me? What can you tell me about epithelium? Who knows something about epithelium? It's one of the four basic kinds of tissues, right? And what's something strange about an epithelium? Yeah.
Hair can be made out of
epithelial tissue. Yeah, hair's made out of epithelial tissue, which you wouldn't think, but those are dead epithelial cells. Right up there, they come out in columns. But they don't have a blood supply. Okay? So the epidermis is avascular, doesn't have blood supply to it. As a matter of fact, no epithelium does. All right, the epithelium is a superficial layer. Or the epidermis is a superficial layer. So let me show you a picture of these things. All right, so here's a nice picture of your skin or your integument. This first layer right here is the epidermis. This next deeper layer is the dermis, and then below the dermis is what? The hypodermis, characterized by having a lot of adipocytes, which you can see right there. Or sometimes we call that the subcutaneous layer. You see any blood vessels in the epidermis right here? Indeed, you don't. You see plenty of blood vessels in the dermis and hypodermis, but none in the epidermis right here. But you might have nerve fibers that go into the epidermis, and you're probably aware already of the organization of, or the histological organization of your skin. Have you ever gotten a paper cut, and it felt really bad, right, but it didn't bleed? You go, wow, that felt really bad. How come it's not bleeding? Why is that? That's because you just don't have any blood vessels here in the epidermis, but you do have nerve fibers, free nerve endings. All right, but if you were to cut yourself a little bit deeper down into the dermis, guess what would happen? Well, for sure, then you would start to bleed. Okay. So those are the main layers. The dermis is dense connective tissue. All right, and what kind of compound, what kind of chemical do you find in dense connective tissue? You have collagen. Collagen is the chemical that gives skin its strength, in particular the dermis right here. The epidermis does not have a lot of strength. It has a little bit of strength due to another kind of chemical compound, which I'll talk about maybe right about now. Okay, here's a picture of the epidermis right up over here. All right, and remember when we were talking about an epithelium, there are different ways to characterize an epithelium. What are some ways we characterize an epithelium? By layers. Somebody said layers. So here's the epidermis. Do you see what? One layer or many? Many. And what do we call it when there's many layers? Stratified. So this is a stratified epithelium. And then when it's many layers like this, and we look at these cells up over here on the free surface, this is your skin that you actually look at right here. What are the shape of these cells? Squamous. So this kind of epithelium is we call stratified squamous epithelium, because it has many layers and those cells are real flat. All right. The epithelium is designed, well, here's the basement membrane. Every epithelium has a basement membrane. This is the first line of cells right here. These are undergoing mitosis. These are the living cells that are reproducing themselves. Right? Now, why are these cells still alive right over here? Because they are close to blood vessels that are in the dermis. Right? And as these cells are lost because maybe your clothing rubs them off or you bump into something, these cells up over here are being replaced by the ones that are undergoing mitosis down over here. So cells are going to start to migrate up to the surface, and as they move up to the surface, guess what happens to them? They move farther and farther away from these blood vessels here in the dermis, and as they move far away from the blood vessels, they don't get oxygen and nutrients, what happens to them? They die. So these cells down over here, this is what we call the stratum basale. I'm going to ask you to know that. Stratum basale, these are alive. But this layer right here is called the stratum corneum. These are actually what? These are dead cells. So every cell that you're looking at right now on anybody is what? It's a dead cell. Okay. And in between, they're either partly alive or partly dead. So let's look at the notes that I got right here. All right, the epidermis is a stratified squamous epithelium. It's made to resist abrasion, but it's also a permeability barrier. Oh, I can't erase that. Permeability barrier. What the heck does... when I say resists abrasion, what does that mean? It resists abrasion because when you rub these cells off, is that a big deal? Basically not, because they're dead already. And what happens? Well, the cells underneath them just replace them when they get sloughed off. Right? So it's not such a big deal. But now, permeability barrier, what does that mean? Permeability barrier to one particular compound, water. All right, so the epidermis keeps you from dehydrating. So there are lipid compounds within the skin that just don't allow water to diffuse through your epidermis. All right, now as far as growth is concerned, growth starts where? The stratum basale. And cells move up to the stratum corneum. The cells in the stratum basale are kind of what shape? They're a little bit more columnar or cuboidal. And as they move away from the basement membrane up to the stratum corneum, they become flat. You see that on this diagram right here? Here's kind of a columnar cell. And as they migrate up to the surface, what happens to them? They flatten out. There's something else that happens. All right, the stratum basale. These are what? Alive. But the cornified cells, what are dead? But they're filled with a kind of chemical, something we call keratin. And keratin is a hard chemical. And so keratin gives your skin some strength. And it's a little bit different than collagen, because collagen, where do you find collagen? Where do you find collagen? It's in connective tissue for sure, right? Yeah, dense connective tissue. Oh, I got some handouts here, some extras. Okay. But collagen is what? It's found in the matrix, which is what? Extracellular. That's the extracellular space. But this keratin is inside these cells. It's what? Intracellular. So it's hard. It helps protect your skin. Yeah, put these on the stool right away. Thanks. So it helps protect your skin, but it's a chemical compound that's inside the cell. So it's not really like collagen. And guess what? Two chemical compounds get mixed up all the time by people. Collagen and keratin, because they sound the same. So you got to know, keratin is inside skin cells. Collagen is where? Inside some, is in the matrix outside the cells in some kind of connective tissue. Okay. There's something else that I see you right here. In the stratum of cell, there's another kind of cell. And I don't know, what kind of color? Is that a red or gray or something? Brown? Okay, brownish. Well, good, I like that. It should be brown. Okay. This kind of cell, you see, it has all of these processes or fingers reaching up between all the other cells within the epidermis right here. This is what we call a melanocyte. And a melanocyte produces another kind of chemical compound, which we call melanin. Right? And melanin is a pigment. Can anybody tell me what a pigment is? Yeah, a pigment is something that produces color. And the reason why pigment produces color is because maybe more physically based explanation is that a pigment will absorb light. A pigment absorbs light. And in white light, what kind of colors are in white light? You know, all the colors of the rainbow are in white light. So if we have white light and we shine it through a prism, what do we get out? We get a rainbow. And what kind of colors are in the rainbow? How could you remember what kind of colors are in there? And in what order are they located? Yeah, there's a little saying, right? Roy G. Biv is the order of colors in a rainbow. Which one are next to each other? You got what? Orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. Okay? So if you have a pigment that absorbs all of these colors, guess what that pigment's going to look like? It's going to look black because you don't see any colors whatsoever. But what color are these chairs? Yellow. Let's just say they're yellow. Okay, close. They look yellow. The pigment in these chairs are absorbing what? Red, orange, green, blue, indigo, and violet, but not yellow. All right, so pigments will absorb different wavelengths of radiation based on just their chemical properties. And for instance, nail polish has pigment in there. And it absorbs certain kind of light, but it will reflect, if you're wearing yellow nail polish, it's going to absorb everything except for the yellow. Yellow is going to be what? Reflected at you, and your eyes can perceive it. Paints have pigments in them. Plants have pigments in them. And guess what those pigments, what color is that pigment in plant? It is, when you look at a plant, what color does it look like? Green. All right, so plant pigments absorb red, orange, and yellow, but not blue, indigo, and violet. I mean, it absorbs these here, And these here, but not green, it reflects it so that you can see that particular color. Okay. Melanin, on the other hand, is a brown to black pigment. Brown to black, depending on the person. And so what's the job of melanin in somebody's skin? It's to absorb, what, basically all the colors of the rainbow. Why do you think that's important? Because sunlight is very damaging, especially this end of the spectrum over here. Okay, so the more melanocytes you have that produce more melanin, the more protected you are from the harmful effects of sunlight. And sunlight actually is extremely damaging. It's something here in the United States we don't really take much precautions of, but if you were to live in some other part of the world where there is bright sun, like Australia, you'd never see anybody walking around outside without a hat on, because sunlight produces what kind of pathology in people? Like skin cancer, for instance, would be one example. But it also prematurely ages and damages the skin. Even down, all sunlight can go all the way through the epidermis down into the dermis and cause a lot of damage. So people with a genetic background or heritage, all right, from the more equatorial regions of the planet where the sun is the strongest, right, they have what? A darker skin color to protect them from sunlight. People that have a heritage from the more northerly or southerly regions of the planet, typically they're lighter in color because sunlight is not so damaging the further you move away from the equator. Okay, so who's protected more from sunlight? Somebody that has a lot of melanin and melanocytes, or somebody that hardly has any? Okay. People that have darker skin are really protected more from sunlight compared to people with lighter colored skin. And indeed, that is the case. Somebody with darker color skin, their skin stays younger for a much longer period in their life than somebody that has very little melanin. Their skin is typically damaged very easily by just sunlight, just by going out in the sun. All right, so I want you to know melanin and what kind of cell produces melanin. It is this melanocyte right here. Okay, and again, you can see what? You can see that stratified squamous epithelium right here. All right, so what we've talked about so far is the stratum basale, which is right here, and then this is the dead layer up over here, the stratum corneum. So you got to know two layers of the epidermis, the stratum basale and the stratum corneum. Even though you might even see some other layers in skin, but I'm not going to ask you to know those. I want you to know where it starts and where it ends, and something about that melanocyte. All right, so what layer is below the epidermis? That's the dermis right here. And we can see, for instance, some nerve endings here for touch receptors. You also have free nerve endings for temperature and pain. You have other kinds of nerve endings for vibration. So you can perceive all kinds of different sensations on your skin. You even have nerve endings attached to this hair follicle right over here. And of course, you're probably aware of that, because if somebody lightly brushes up against your arm and moves your hair follicles, you can feel that. Or if the wind blows against your skin and it blows these little hair follicles around, you certainly can feel that because of these nerve endings right here. All right. This right here is a sebaceous gland. It secretes an oily substance along this hair follicle, and that just helps prevent dehydration, and it also lubricates the skin so that it doesn't dry out and crack. Sebaceous gland. Here's a sweat gland. Guess what it secretes? Sweat. Right? So when you get hot, that sweat comes on top of your skin, evaporates, and that helps cool you off. That comes from this kind of gland right here. Then we have this muscle that attaches from the epidermis down to the base of this hair follicle over here. This is called an arrector pili muscle. And who's familiar with that arrector pili muscle? What does it do? What does it give you? Yeah, like goosebumps. When you get cold, right, or when you're apprehensive or something, this muscle is going to contract. It's going to pull on this hair follicle, and then that hair is going to stand up like that. Okay, and it's also going to be pulled up to the surface, which is going to cause a little bump right around the shaft of the hair when it contracts. All right, so your skin has what? Well, your skin, it's got the epidermis and dermis. It's got muscle, it's got glands, and hair. So that's everything that we've talked about so far. You see these little bumps right here between the epidermis and the dermis? We call those dermal papillae. The reason why you have them is because, remember, the epidermis doesn't have any blood vessels going through it, but it still needs oxygen. So these capillaries that go up into the dermal papillae is just one way your body has figured out how to get blood vessels close to all these regions of the epidermis without actually going through the basement membrane. And you're kind of all familiar with these dermal papillae because they actually project themselves onto the surface of the skin as well and form these ridges and valleys. Guess what they produce? At least on the palms of your hands and the soles of your feet, they produce fingerprints. Okay, so they actually, you can actually see these the results of these dermal papillae even on the surface of the skin and in a couple of locations of your body, like your hands and your feet. Okay, so let's talk about the dermis a little bit. It's dense connective tissue. So a connective tissue is what? A lot of space between cells. It's got a big matrix. And in that matrix, it has collagen and elastic fibers. What is the chemical in the epidermis that gives the epidermis its strength? It's not collagen. It's called keratin. And don't forget that keratin is intracellular, not extracellular. Collagen is what? Extracellular, outside the cell. That collagen is oriented in all kinds of different directions, so your skin doesn't want to stretch in any one particular kind of direction. It will resist stretching. But it can be overstretched. For instance, during childbearing, when somebody's stomach gets really big, okay, then the dermis actually gets overstretched, and that causes damage to the collagen filaments within the dermis, and we call those striae. And you can see those, okay, when somebody goes back to their normal size. All right, those projections are what we call papillae. Skin color. So when you look at people, they're all different kinds of colors. Right? And why might they be different colors? It could be due to two different kinds of things. It could be due to pigments, or it could actually be due to blood flowing through that part of the skin. Like your lips. What color are your lips? They're kind of what? They should be, I'm colorblind. I don't appreciate all this cool stuff. But I would guess what? Pink. Right? Pinkish. All right? And there's not a particular pigment in skin right there. It's just what? It's highly vascular. The epidermis is very thin. And there are a lot of capillaries and blood vessels there. And what color is blood? Red. And when you dilute red out, what do you get? You get pink. Okay? All right. So people's ears might be a little pink or whatever. All right. And then pigments. What's the main pigment that we find in skin? What did we call that? That was melanin from melanocytes. And that is brown. All right. So the natural sunscreen we call melanin. And it's black to brown. Melanocytes produce melanin in the stratum basale, that's the deepest layer of the epithelium. And what's the job of that melanin? To protect you from sunlight, basically, so that you don't burn. All right, moles and age spots are an increased number of melanocytes in just some local area of your body. All right, nobody has the exact same skin color all over the place. Freckle is an increase in melanin production. The same number of melanocytes, but you might have a couple melanocytes in one area of your skin, which is producing even more melanin, and it's going to be a little bit darker. Here's an interesting condition. Albinism is an inability to produce melanin. Albinism. So there are people, and then there are all kinds of different animals that can't produce melanin. So what kind of pigmentation will they have? They'll be completely devoid of any kind of coloration. So their whole skin will look like just diluted blood. They'll be pink. Their eyes are pink. Their lips are pink. Their hair is going to be, there's no blood in hair. They're just going to be white. All right? So somebody with albinism is going to be completely devoid of any kind of coloration. But they'll have all the other characteristics of their race or their heritage. Right? They'll just be devoid of color. And that happens with all animals, fish and giraffes and squirrels and horses and whatever. And they're just what? That's just called the disease, or the abnormal condition is called albinism. Okay, now what's the side effect of albinism? What do these animals suffer from? And what do these people have to be very concerned with? Sunlight. Yeah, if they go out in the sun, you know, in Southern California, probably for 2 or 3 minutes, guess what they have? Sunburn. And if they get sunburned, they have what? Skin damage, long-lasting skin damage, and a predisposition to skin cancer. All right, so we don't see very many people with albinism in Southern California just because it's so dangerous for them to be outside. But take a guess. Where might you find a pretty healthy population? Yeah, northern parts of the country. Not like Miami or Tampa, Florida, but places like Seattle, right? And it would not be uncommon to find somebody with albinism in Seattle, because there people can go outside without getting burned to death, even in just a couple of minutes. That's an inherited condition, and it's just a gene that's responsible for producing melanin. And if you don't get that gene from either your mom or your dad, then you can't produce melanin. Okay, so if we ever get around to talking about inherited traits or genetics, you could see how that happens. Okay. All right, that's albinism. Cyanosis. Anybody know what color that looks like? Blue. Cyanotic is somebody that looks blue, and usually blood, when it's oxygenated, looks red. But blood, when it's short on oxygen, it actually has a little bit of a bluish tint to it. Kind of looks blue. So people in respiratory distress or people that are choking, their arterial blood turns from red to blue, so their lips are going to be kind of blue looking, right? And they might actually have blue, if they don't have a lot of melanin in their skin, their whole skin is going to look kind of bluish, right? That means what? Well, they're dying. They're not getting oxygen into their body, right? So cyanosis is, you know, a very serious condition. So if you see somebody turning blue, hopefully you're CPR certified and you can clear their airway for them. Or maybe they stop breathing and you can do you can help them, or you can breathe for them by blowing into their chest, right? That will bring their color back. Babies in that are born, maybe they had an umbilical cord wrapped around their neck as they were being born that prevented them from getting maternal blood and breathing. They're cyanotic, all right? But babies can handle that kind of insult very easily, right? But adults have a real terrible time. Like your brain can only go for 4 seconds without oxygen, but a baby, a newborn baby, can go minutes without a lot of damage to the brain. Okay, so that's, as soon as a baby's born, that's one of the clinical signs that a physician looks for immediately is what, the skin color. And it goes into an index called an Apgar sign, the color of somebody's skin. Blue is not a good sign, right? All right, jaundice, that's another kind of color. Anybody know what kind of color that is? Yellow. That's when somebody has kind of a bright, not just, it's a very bright yellow kind of color, and the whites of their eyes will be yellow. Fingernails will be yellow. And that could be due to a couple of different kinds of conditions. Whenever your body starts to break down a lot of red blood cells, the hemoglobin gets broken down into a compound that's yellow. It's called bilirubin. And that builds up in your body and you become jaundiced. Another particular case is when you have liver disease. When you maybe have liver cirrhosis, or if you're taking chemotherapy for cancer and the chemotherapy is also killing your liver, then people can become jaundiced as a result of that as well. All right, which is a yellow coloration. And even babies can be jaundiced. They can be cyanotic if they're in respiratory distress. They can be jaundiced, for instance, there's a particular condition where the mother's body starts to kill the baby's red blood cells. And those millions of red blood cells that are being killed release a lot of bilirubin into the blood, which causes the infant to look yellow. When we get to blood, we'll maybe talk about that. It's hemolytic disease of the newborn, or erythroblastosis fetalis. That happens when the mom and the dad have different blood types. One is Rh positive and one is Rh negative. Maybe you've heard of that. And that was the reason why when people got married not too long ago, they'd have to get a blood test to find out what blood type they are. Now, it's not a requirement. It's not a law in many states, but it's still an excellent idea to know, okay, what the blood type of the mother and the father is to find out if this particular condition could ever develop. And then we have birthmarks all over our body. That's down in the dermis. And a birthmark is just one area where you have a lot of blood vessels that develop. And so they have a tendency to be, what, a little bit more red in that particular area, right? And that's pretty much a normal condition. Okay. What did I leave out right here? Yeah. Warts. Warts and moles, skin tags, and things like that. A wart could be due to an infection, just a local infection due to a virus, all right, which is going to cause some skin to grow out, as well as kind of a benign skin tag. And I'm getting some around my neck where there's a lot of abrasion, like around somebody's collar. As you grow older, you can get little skin tags. And little skin tags is a proliferation of skin tissue, and it has everything that skin has. It's got epidermis, it's got dermis, and it's got blood vessels in there. So that if you cut a little skin tag or a wart, guess what? It's going to bleed because it has everything that the integument has in there. So it's got blood vessels, and it could have a hair follicle growing out of it, right? It can have everything that skin has. It's just one area that is proliferating, it's growing more rapidly than the other, but it's usually benign. It can't break off from one location, travel to another spot in your body and start to grow, like for instance your brain or your liver. That would be bad. That would be cancer. Okay. One form of cancer that is really bad is when this melanocyte turns cancerous. All right. It has a tendency to break away from the basement membrane and migrate to different locations of your body and start growing in your brain or your liver or bone or whatever. That's called melanoma. And so melanoma is very aggressive. It's a very dangerous kind of cancer to get. And I don't think we treat it very well. I don't know how we're doing this year, but last year and year before was not so good. But treatments are getting better and better all the time, which is one reason why, what should you do with sunlight? Protect yourself from sunlight, okay? Because you don't want to get a melanoma, or you don't want to get a basal cell carcinoma from a regular cell right over here. So whether you're light-skinned or dark-skinned, right, unless you're really dark-skinned, you should be really concerned about getting too much sunlight because it causes a lot of cancer. Okay. What other condition don't I have on here? That's kind of in the news every once in a while. Have you ever heard of vitiligo? Vitiligo, is that, am I saying that right? I believe so. Yeah. Vitiligo is when somebody's going to have a little patch of very white skin on some location of their body. Every other coloration of their skin is going to be, you know, what genetically their skin is programmed. But you might have a little spot someplace that's just pure white. Who has that? Your dad has that. Okay. All over the place. Yeah. Does he have to be careful when he goes outside? Yeah, that little spot is going to turn really red, it's going to burn, and then it's going to be predisposed to cancer. All right, so if you have that spot, then you got to put a lot of sunblock on it, or put it underneath clothing or a hat or something like that. But there's a famous personality that has it. Yeah, Michael Jackson. I don't know for sure, Okay, but he says he does, and he's lost so much pigment, okay, that he's got like a vitiligo everywhere over his body, right? And that's not such a cool thing, because why? Your skin is damaged very easily from sunlight as a result of that. So vitiligo is what? A decreased number of melanocytes or melanin that's not being produced in that one location in your body. And I've got a nephew that has vitiligo. He's got it up over here in his forehead. So he's got, always has really long hair that falls down over it. Okay. So that's that. The epidermis, dermis. What about some accessory skin structures? Like hair. Okay. Hair is a thread-like structure consisting of columns of dead epithelial cells filled with, not collagen, but keratin. Okay. And would you think your skin has more keratin or your hair, which is harder? Your hair is harder because it has more keratin. Okay. And also in the hair follicle, there are melanocytes that put melanin into your hair that give it a certain kind of color. All right, the shaft lies above the skin surface. All right, so here's the shaft of the hair, right up over here. Here's that sebaceous gland. Here is the follicle right over here. We talked about that erector pili muscle being attached to the hair follicle. The hair follicle has a deep invagination of the epidermis. And we call that a reservoir of epidermal cells. Let's take a look and see what that has to do with anything. Let's talk about it in terms of burns. All right, so here we have that skin again. And let's just say that you're pretty lucky and you touched something hot, but only for a real brief period of time. And maybe you burned only the stratum corneum right up over here. And maybe damage these cells a little bit down over here, but not very much. You didn't kill them. All right, but the stratum corneum, is that such a big deal? Because the stratum corneum has what kind of cells in it anyway? They're dead cells, right? So that's no big deal. But it does turn red. We call that a first degree burn because these capillaries dilate a little bit and they start to leak fluid and that blood is what, red colored? So that area where you have that burn is going to be a little bit red. It might swell up some. All right, now a second degree burn is a little bit deeper, maybe down to about this layer right here. Now you start maybe killing some of these cells that are still alive in the epidermis. But what does that do? That makes these capillaries very leaky because you started to damage these capillaries. So fluid leaks out of the capillaries. And what happens then? You get a blister because that fluid starts to leak out of these capillaries. That's what we call what? A second degree burn. And that's more painful because you have nerve endings right up over here. All right, so it's a little bit more dangerous situation. Now, what's a third degree burn? A third degree burn is when somebody gets burned all the way through the epidermis. All right, and the stratum corneum is gone. Stratum basale could be gone, and now all you see is this dermal tissue right over here. So maybe about to this layer right here. Is that person lucky or unlucky? Okay, I hear some. You guys have some opinions. I can't quite hear. What did you say? Unlucky or lucky? Unlucky. Okay, that's a good one. All right. Well, I say that this person is still pretty lucky. For the following reason. Because look at this hair follicle right here. Look at the stratum basale. What's happening in the stratum basale right here with normal skin? The skin is what? Rebuilding itself through mitosis. But when it gets to this hair follicle, what does that stratum basale do? It goes all the way down past the sebaceous gland, all the way back down past the hair follicle, all the way to the root of this hair follicle right here. This is stratum basale of what? The epithelium. So if somebody burns to this layer right here, these living cells around a hair follicle can still grow back and repopulate skin everywhere on the person's surface. So somebody that has a third degree burn down to this level, I think is still lucky because their skin will do what? will grow back because of these, the reservoir of the stratum basal cells around this hair follicle. So I think they're pretty lucky. Of course, they're still going to dehydrate. You have to give them a lot of fluids. They're still going to be susceptible to infections. You have to give them tons of antibiotics. But if given proper treatment, that skin will grow back. Okay? And they're going to be miserable. No two ways about it, but opiates will handle that. Okay? So with proper treatment, they'll be okay. But now what happens? If somebody gets burned, not a first degree, not a second degree, or third degree here, but a third degree burn down all the way to here. Now what kind of luck did that person have? Yeah, that's really an unlucky person. Because do they have any stratum basal cells anywhere? They're completely gone. So this person in this area where he's been burned or she's been burned can never grow their skin back because the reservoir of these cells is completely burned away. And then what do you need? Then you need a graft. Right? Then you need skin from some other part of your body to be harvested and put over this area, right, that will grow back. And that could be a really long process. And as a matter of fact, you might need a graft, a temporary graft from another animal, like a pig or something, to protect this area from infection and from dehydration until you get enough skin of your own to grow back and put over this area right here. So the hair follicle is real important for what? Sensation, for protection, because it will resist abrasion. That's good for sensation. But it's also what? A reservoir of epidermal cells in case your epidermis gets damaged. It can repopulate your skin. So that's real handy. Okay. What about some accessory skin structures? We've got some glands. We've got sebaceous glands and sweat glands. We kind of saw those already. The sebaceous glands secrete an oil, which we call sebum, that lubricates the skin, helps prevent dehydration, and also it helps prevent against some kinds of bacteria. Right, so that's an important function of your skin, is to prevent infection from deeper structures of your body. All right, sweat glands, on the other hand, have two different forms. They can be, let's see what's on your slide. I got a couple different names. Wow, you just have to know sweat gland. Let's look at this one. Ah, ecrine. All right, so I'm gonna delete this from your slide, merocrine. We're going to say ecrine because that's what's on this slide right here. All right, so that's just a sweat gland, and you can see sweat going through this tubule up to through this pore onto the surface of your skin, for instance, when you're hot. It secretes water and some salts, and that just causes an increase in electrical conductivity when you get anxious or whenever you're under stress. They'll secrete this, and that's kind of the basis of one of the bases of a lie detector test. For people that have a conscience, when you lie, that ecrine gland is going to get a little active. It's going to secrete a salt solution on your skin. It's going to conduct electricity, and that can be measured. All right. But for people who don't care if they're lying or not, then a lie detector test won't be able to measure anything because people that are chronic liars don't know if they're lying or not anymore. All right, so this gland is not going to know the difference. All right, an apocrine gland is a modified sweat gland. It's open to hair follicles in the axilla and genital region. What's that? All right, that's like your armpit, right? And that's your inguinal region. And it secretes not just salt and water, but also some organic material. And that organic material can be used as a food source to some bacteria, and that can produce an odor. So when bacteria grow on that organic secretion, then that can cause what a sense that our nose can pick up, which is what we call an odor. All right, so you got sebaceous glands around hair follicles and then sweat glands. You also have some other modified sweat glands. You have a ceruminous sweat gland inside your ear. It's a sweat gland. Guess what it secretes? Hair wax. Okay? And a mammary gland is a modified sweat gland. All right, but it secretes what? More of an organic solution, not just salt and water, at least after the first couple of days of birth. Okay, initially it doesn't, but eventually it does. All right, so those are some accessory structures. Okay, let's look at a nail. A nail is kind of like hair. Here's a nail. Okay. It's a thin plate of dead stratum corneum cells. And it's got some keratin in there. How much keratin you think is in there compared to skin or even to hair? Probably even more, right? Because it's real hard. Right, but that's just epithelium. There's a nail body, a nail root, a cuticle, the nail matrix, and the lanula. Let's take a look. So here's a cross-section of a nail. All right, so what were these structures? All right, the nail body. This is the body of the nail. Your book calls it the nail plate. And here's the lanula right here underneath the nail plate in this region, right about in here. This is called the matrix. Not to be confused with the matrix of connective tissue. This is where the nail grows from. This area right here, that's nail that's already formed, this is what's called the root. And the root is what? Underneath the cuticle. But the nail doesn't grow from the root, that's already formed nail. The nail grows from what? The tissue right in this region right here, which is called the matrix. And you can actually see some residual part of the matrix right through the nail body or the nail plate, and that's what forms the lanula right there underneath your nail. All right, so don't forget, the nail gets its strength from what kind of compound? Keratin. Keratin right there. And what region of the nail is the active growing part? It's the matrix, right? It's the matrix. Okay, so functions of the integumentary system, well, protection. Right? Protects you from water loss. It helps protect you from infection. It's got melanocytes that produce melanin that protect you from sunlight. So your skin does a lot of protection work. Your hair is a good heat insulator, so it protects you from cold. Your eyebrows and eyelashes protects your eyes from foreign objects from falling inside your eyes. And you have hair inside your nose and your ears, and again, that protects those orifices from getting foreign bodies going up into them, right? Including dust particles. And nails for protection, because it protects the tips of your digits, like your fingers and your toes, but also for, what, self-defense. We don't really have claws, but most mammals have claws. All right. The skin also helps in temperature regulation. For instance, when you get too hot, those sweat glands secrete sweat, which cools you down. And the blood vessels in the dermis vasodilate. That means they get bigger. That carries more blood to the surface of your skin. And that blood then releases heat to evaporation, cools it down. But when you're cold, you have vasoconstriction. Blood vessels in your skin constrict. You don't have as much blood going to your skin. That keeps heat inside your body. So skin is very important for temperature regulation. All right, we talked about the bad things about sunlight, but here's one good thing. Sunlight, in particular ultraviolet light, when it hits the skin, it converts an inactive form of vitamin D, okay, to a more active form. So it helps in the synthesis of vitamin D. And vitamin D is necessary for calcium and phosphate uptake in your diet. What the heck good is calcium? It helps make strong bones, right? So without vitamin D, you're going to have really weak bones. And you really don't want to have weak bones, because they'll break. And nobody likes to have a fracture. Right? And then, of course, the skin is real important because of sensation. Pain, heat, cold, pressure, vibration. All right, I'm sure maybe you all have been to the dentist and you've been anesthetized, certain part of your mouth has been anesthetized, and you can't feel anything, right? Which is actually kind of a good thing until you leave the dentist's office and you want to go have lunch. And what does the dentist say? Don't go have lunch until the anesthesia wears off. Why is that? Because you could be chewing on your own tongue, right, or your cheek, and just mashing it completely to smithereens and you won't notice a thing. Right? So that would be bad because then you got to get over that kind of insult. So, right, pain is really a good kind of sensation because when you feel pain, you withdraw yourself from that kind of activity or from that kind of painful stimulus, and that protects your body. All right, so sensation is a very good thing. Now, what about aging? Effects on the skin. There's pretty much one statement that kind of covers it all, and that is, most age-related effects on the skin are a result in decreased vascularity, which means what? Blood supply. All right, so as we get older, the blood supply to the skin decreases. And everything kind of follows along with this blood supply. All right, the skin becomes thinner and more transparent because the cells in the dermis don't synthesize as much collagen. The cells in the epidermis don't secrete or synthesize as much keratin, so skin gets a little bit weaker, both from the dermis and the epidermis. All right, so that just means what? That the dermis is more easily damaged. But if you get cut when you're older, what does that mean? It just takes longer to heal because your skin doesn't have the oxygen and nutrients to heal as fast as it once did. As blood supply decreases, you have decreased production of elastic fibers, but you still have a lot of lipid in the hypodermis, and that causes, what, the skin to wrinkle and kind of sag. Decreased activity of sweat glands and sebaceous glands. What does that do? What happens if you lose the ability of your sweat glands to secrete sweat? What are you more susceptible to? Okay, dry skin, yeah. But sweat is primarily for what? Cooling you down, right? Keeping you cool when it's hot. So the elderly are much more susceptible to heat stroke. Okay, and anything to do with heat. Like if there's ever a heat wave in LA, there's always an advisory. Elderly people should stay indoors and not go outside because they're just more susceptible to overheating. And the sebaceous glands, for sure. Sebaceous glands secrete oil, which lubricate the skin, so as you get older, your skin will just get drier and more easily cracked as a result of that. Okay, you might have, as a result of decreased blood supply, you might have a decreased number of melanocytes, right? So your skin might get little age spots, which could be due maybe to an increased number of melanocytes or activity in some different location in your skin. All right, and what happens to people's hair as they grow older if it doesn't fall out? Okay, it turns gray because in those hair follicles, what do you got? You got these little blood vessels that are supplying these melanocytes in this hair follicle, and as these capillaries start to degrade, then hair doesn't grow as fast, and it doesn't pick up as much pigment, and it's going to turn silver or white or gray as a result. Okay, and that's due to decreased melanocyte production. All right, so these are just some age-related effects regarding your integument. So do elderly people really have a hard time with hot temperatures? Yeah. How many years ago in France, one summer, there were like 13,000 elderly people died because there's a heat wave. And France is not typically that warm of a country, so nobody had air conditioners, or very few people had air conditioners. And also in Europe, guess what happens in the summertime? Everybody goes on vacation for the whole summer. There's very few people that actually work. So a lot of people went on vacation, left their grandma and grandparents at home, and they took off for the Riviera, and France got hit with this really terrible heat wave. And about 13,000 grandmas and grandpas died as a result of that. That was only about maybe 4 years ago. Anybody remember that happening in the news? And it was just phenomenal. You could do a Google search on geriatric heat wave death in France. It was just incredible. So if you have a grandma and grandpa, you got to be really careful they don't overexert themselves when it gets hot outside, because they're really susceptible to overheating. Okay. And then I got kind of a funny question for you to ponder. Okay. As we get older, we see that our hair follicles aren't so active. Our hair growth stops, right, or slows down. And those melanocytes stop producing. Okay. And it's true, right, people with really dark skin, they'll end up with gray hair. Okay. But how come somebody with really dark skin, how come their skin doesn't turn white like their hair does? You ever wonder that? Is that an interesting question to kind of think about? I don't know. I thought it was. Maybe I'm a little bit different. Okay. But why is it when people grow old, their hair turns white, but their skin doesn't turn white? Okay. Well, what did we say about age-related effects on the skin? It's due to what? Decreased vascularity. All right. So it just so happens that these capillaries in the hair follicle start to die away a lot sooner than what these capillaries up here in the dermal papillae do. So your skin is not quite as sensitive compared to the hair follicles down over here because of these capillaries. Otherwise, for sure, your skin would turn white just like your hair does. Okay, because it's that blood supply that's important for keeping these cells alive right here. All right. Well, let's look at some study questions. Do I have any study questions for integumentary? Number one, what's the composition of the integumentary system? Skin and accessory structures. Well, let's go ahead and say what those accessory structures are. You got hair, nails, you got that muscle, and then you got glands. Okay, so that's what makes up your integument. Functions of the integumentary system. Ooh, there are a lot of them. Protection. Protection from sunlight comes to mind, because sunlight is probably the most damaging insult that any of us will really face in here. Sunlight, protection from bacteria, protection from dehydration. Other functions of the integument would be, temperature regulation, right? Temperature regulation. Vitamin D production. And another function of the integument would be for sensation. All right, so protection, temperature regulation, vitamin D production, and sensation. What are the two main layers of the integument? The superficial one is the epidermis. The deeper one is the dermis. And then there's even one deeper that don't count. That's a hypodermis. Okay, so you don't necessarily have to know that. What kind of epithelium makes up the epidermis? Stratified squamous epithelium. Okay. Hopefully that's not too hard to see, because we looked at our tissues already. But without studying tissues, you probably would have no clue. But now that you've looked at tissues, it's probably pretty obvious. And what is a stratified squamous epithelium specialized for? It resists abrasion, right? So that those outer layer skin cells can rub off, but that's no big deal. They're designed to rub off. They're being replaced by the stratum basale. All right, where is the hypodermis located? Somebody tell me, where is that hypodermis? It's beneath the dermis, exactly. That's in the name. Hypo meaning below the dermis. It's not really part of your integument, but we talk about it right now just for the same thing. It's loose areolar connective tissue with a lot of adipocytes. That's where people like to store, or that's where we store lipid. Okay. What are the deep and most superficial layers of the epidermis? So let's start with the deepest layer. What's the deepest layer called? of the epidermis. First, just the epidermis. What layer of the epidermis? It's a stratum basale. Yeah, I like stratum basale. And then the most superficial is the stratum corneum. So the cells go from basale to corneum, and they start out columnar, and they end up squamous, and they start out alive, and they end up dead. Okay? And they start with no keratin, and they end up with lots of keratin, which is intracellular. So I suppose you could say all those things. Okay, what gives the cells of the stratum corneum their strength? I know that one. That would be keratin. Okay, I don't want to say collagen there. Collagen gives the dermis its strength, but not the epidermis. All right, the number 8. Name the pigment which protects the integument from solar radiation. That's melanin. That's a pigment. And what cells secrete it? Melanocyte. All right, what kinds of chemicals give the dermis its strength? And name the cells that produce them. Ooh, that's tough. That's from the previous chapter. Okay, what kind of chemicals are in the dermis that give dermis its strength? Collagen is one. The other one doesn't give a lot of strength, but a little bit. Elastic tissues, right? It can stretch and then it comes back together again. And what kind of cells produce collagen and elastic fibers? Fibroblasts. That would be that fibroblast. Okay, what are papillae? As a matter of fact, maybe I would put dermal papillae there. Papillae. Yeah, it produces those fingerprints. That's invaginations of the dermis up into the epidermis. And where you have that invagination, you have capillaries that will nourish the epidermis in that little cone, that little papillae sticking up into the epidermis. What about the factors that produce skin color? The two things that do it, two general things. Blood and pigments. Okay, and somebody said melanocytes or melanin. That's right. That's a kind of pigment. A melanocyte produces that pigment. So just saying pigment or blood. Blood is going to give you what? A little pinkish or reddish cast. A pigment is going to be some coloration of what? Brown or black. But there are some other things that can alter skin color. Like what? Albinism is one. Cyanosis. Jaundice. And vitiligo is an autoimmune disease where somebody's own immune system attacks melanocytes or melanin and destroys them. So that's why one of the treatments for vitiligo is a steroid treatment, cortisone treatment. Okay. Number 12. What are accessory skin structures? Hair, nails, glands, erector pili, muscle. Okay. What two types of glands are found in the skin? Two types are sebaceous and sweat glands. Sebaceous secrete an oil, but sweat glands, there are two types of sweat glands. One secretes sweat, which is water and salt. And then another kind of sweat gland called apocrine gland secretes an organic solution. And that cerumenous gland, I didn't really talk about, that secretes earwax. We didn't really talk about mammary glands, but later we will. Okay, what gives a nail its strength? Give me the chemical compound. Keratin, right? It's intracellular keratin. What kind of cells make up a nail? Are they dermal cells or epidermal cells? The nail comes from the nail matrix, which is really epidermis, right? And they're filled with keratin. Okay, that's a keratin cell. What kind of cells make up hair? You know, it's pretty much the same that make up nails. It's the epidermal cells. It's just the arrangement is a little bit different. Instead of being a hard, flat plate, a hair is more columnar. in nature. Did I ask this question already? I did. What chemical give hair and nails their strength? That would be keratin. And then the last one, what's the most important factor that controls the skin aging process? Blood vessels in the skin, right, or the vascularity. And as we get older, what happens to the blood supply? It gets cut off, right? And then our skin just really ages. Oh, you know, and along those lines, I guess I would say that sunlight really damages those capillaries. That's why melanin is so important, to protect you from sunlight. Especially when you are young. Okay. So I think you didn't have a quiz. Did you have a quiz on chapter 5? Yeah, so this week you got two quizzes. One next time and then one take-home, which you get to work on over the weekend. So the take-home probably will be on chapter number 7, I think. The one in class is on 6. Who's got a syllabus? 5 and 6? For the one in class? Okay, and then 7 for the take-home? Let me take a look-see. Because we should probably know what's going to be on the quiz. Okay, the quiz is just going to be on chapter 6, which is the integument. And then the take-home is going to be on chapter 7, which I'm going to start talking about next time. I'll hand that out at the end of class so that you guys don't take the quiz during class when I'm talking. That would be too easy. Yeah, I got your quizzes. So how about if I just pass your quizzes out now? I'm going to stop the recorder.